Epilogue. Fritz. Chapter 55. July 31st, 2000, Washington, D.C. President Dean Cooper Wallace worked late hours in his office, in his secret living quarters at Fort McNair, and thought nothing of inconveniencing his staff and visitors for meetings in the middle of the night. He did not rise from behind his desk as Commissioner Duncan Monroe, Admiral Sandecker, and Peter Harper were escorted into the office by his newly appointed Chief of Staff, Harold Pecorelli. Nor did he invite his visitors to sit down. Wallace was not a happy man. The news media was crucifying him for his relations with Chin Shang, now accused of conspiracy for the destruction and deaths along the Mississippi River. To make matters worse, the Chinese leaders had thrown Chin Shang on their sacrificial altar and denied any association with him. The head of Chin Shang Maritime Limited had disappeared, and even the Chinese government was at a loss as to his whereabouts. The Jade Adventurer was still at sea on its way back to China. Throughout the voyage from Lake Michigan, Captain Chun Jiang had maintained radio silence, not wanting to be the one to announce Chin Shang's death at the hands of the Americans. At the same time, Wallace took great delight in pretending that he played a key role in the discovery and salvage of the Chinese art treasures. Negotiations were already underway for their return to mainland China. Photojournalists and television news cameras had a field day, recording the incredible display of artifacts as they were removed from the original teak packing crates and prepared for preservation. The bones of Peking Man by themselves caused an international sensation. Advised that it was not in his best interests to interfere, Wallace remained quiet as the INS and FBI, working hand in hand, rounded up nearly 300 Chinese gang leaders and members around the country and arraigned them for trial. Thousands of illegal immigrants working in virtual slavery were taken into custody for later deportation back to China. The flow of illegal aliens coming in from Asia may not have been plugged completely, but the smuggling operations were cut back drastically. The president's closest advisors, having observed the recklessness of the previous chief executive in conducting cover-ups, strongly advised Wallace simply to admit that mistakes were made and make no excuses. Any errors of judgment were made for what he thought was the good of the country. Damage control was already in high gear to sidestep any criticism encountered along his way for election to a second term. "You stepped far beyond the bounds of your office," Wallace said, directing his wrath toward Monroe. "And you did it without briefing anyone in my office regarding your intent."
"Sir, I did nothing but the job I was appointed to do," Duncan replied resolutely.
"China is a magnificent stage for the future of the American economy, and you jeopardize the close relationship I have worked to build between our two countries. The future of the United States lies in a universal world trading system, and China is a vital step toward that goal."
"But not, Mr. President," said Sandecker with his usual testiness, "if it means flooding the country with illegal immigrants."
"You people are not foreign policy experts, nor are you economists," Wallace said coldly. "Your business, Duncan, is to properly conduct immigration procedures. And yours, Admiral, is to conduct ocean science projects. Neither of you were appointed to run amok."
Sandecker shrugged and then dropped his bomb.
"I admit NUMA scientists and engineers are not in the business of executing criminals, but..."
"What was that you said?" Wallace demanded. "What are you insinuating?" With feigned innocence, Sandecker replied.
"No one briefed you?"
"Briefed me on what?"
"The unfortunate accident that took the life of Chin Shang."
"He's dead?" Wallace gasped. Sandecker nodded solemnly.
"Yes, he suffered a temporary fit of insanity and attacked my special projects director on the wreck of the Princess Doan, who in self-defense was forced to kill Chin Shang."
Wallace was stunned.
"Do you have any idea of what you've done?"
"If ever a monster deserved to be terminated," Sandecker came back caustically, "it was Chin Shang. And I might add that I'm proud it was my people who were responsible. Before the president could censure the admiral, Peter Harper jumped into the debate. I received a report from the CIA revealing that certain members of the Chinese government were themselves plotting to assassinate Qin Shang. Their plan was to appropriate Qin Shang Maritime Limited and merge it with their government-owned shipping line, China Marine. There is no reason to believe they will curtail illegal smuggling operations, but without Qin Shang, they won't be able to operate as efficiently or on the same scale. This is all to our advantage.
You must realize, gentlemen, said Pecorelli diplomatically, the President has policies to protect and interests to defend, no matter how unpopular they might seem.
Sandecker gave Pecorelli a stern look.
It's no longer a secret, Harold, that Qin Shang acted as a middleman between the White House and illegal Chinese interests.
Purely a misinformed judgment call, Pecorelli said, shrugging indifferently. Sandecker turned to President Wallace.
Rather than bring Duncan and me in here to chew our asses, we should be awarded medals for getting rid of a scourge to national security and laying one of the greatest treasures of all time in your lap.
You will certainly score a vast number of points with the Chinese when you return it to them, added Munro.
Yes, yes, an amazing feat, Wallace acknowledged unresponsively.
He pulled a handkerchief from his suit coat pocket and dabbed his upper lip, and then blandly continued to defend his decisions.
You have to look at the international situation through my eyes. I am currently balancing 100 different trade deals with China worth billions of dollars to the American economy and hundreds of thousands of jobs for American workers.
But why should American taxpayers help build China into a global power? Asked Harper.
If nothing else, said Munro, changing the subject, allow the INS more powers to halt illegal immigration. At last estimate, over 6 million illegals are in the United States. We've established solid programs for reducing the flow over the border with Mexico, but the smuggling of Chinese across our shorelines is far more sophisticated and calls for stronger measures.
Maybe it's better to issue them all amnesty, suggested Wallace, and be done with it.
I don't think you realize the seriousness of the situation for our grandchildren, Mr. President, said Munro gravely. By the year 2050, the American population will stand at over 360 million. 50 years after that, with the present birth rate and flow of new immigrants, legal or illegal, the count will be 500 million. From there, the numbers become downright horrifying.
Short of a devastating war or plague, argued Wallace, nothing can stand in the way of the coming worldwide population explosion. As long as we have the capacity to feed ourselves, I fail to see the consequences.
Have you seen the predictions by CIA analysts and geographers? Asked Sandecker.
Wallace shook his head.
I'm not sure what predictions you're talking about. The outlook for the future forecasts a breakup of the United States as we know it.
Ridiculous.
The Chinese, in time, will control the West Coast from San Francisco to Alaska, and the Hispanics will govern the lands east from Los Angeles to Houston.
It's happening before our eyes, said Harper. Enough Chinese have poured into British Columbia alone to take over its politics.
I can't conceive of a divided America, said Wallace.
Sandecker stared at him for a moment.
No nation or civilization lasts forever.
The president's new chief of staff, who replaced Morton Laird, cleared his throat.
I'm sorry for interrupting, Mr. President, but you're late for the next appointment.
Wallace shrugged.
Well, that's it, then. I'm sorry I can't carry this discussion further, gentlemen. However, since you do not agree with my positions on policy, I have no choice but to ask for your resignations.
Sandecker's eyes hardened.
You'll not get mine, Mr. President. I know where too many bodies are buried, literally. And if you fire me, I'll throw so much dirt on the White House, your advisors will still be digging out by the next election.
My sentiments go with the admirals, said Munro. The INS and I have come too far together to hand it over to some bureaucratic stooge. My agents and I have worked closely together for the last 6 years to see light at the end of the tunnel.
No, Mr. President, I'm sorry, but I won't resign without a fight either. Strangely, in the light of such mutinous opposition, Wallace did not become angry. He looked at both men and recognized their grim determination. He realized they were no ordinary officials afraid for their jobs, but dedicated patriots. They were not men he wished to engage in what would prove a messy fight, certainly not now when he needed all the good press and TV coverage he could get to weather the storm. Then he smiled disarmingly. It's a free country, gentlemen. You are entitled to express your dissatisfaction even to the President of the nation. I take back my request for your resignations and shall stand back and allow you to run your respective agencies with a free hand. But I warn you, if either of you cause me any political embarrassment in the future, you'll both be out on the street without a moment's hesitation. Do I make myself clear? Very, said Zandecker. Quite clear, Monroe conceded. Thank you for coming and clearing the air, said Wallace. I wish I could say I enjoyed the company, but it wouldn't be true. Zandecker paused in the doorway. One question, Mr. President. Yes, Admiral? The Chinese historical treasures we recovered out of Lake Michigan. When do you plan to turn them over to the Chinese? After I've milked every political compensation out of them I can get. Then Wallace smiled self-righteously. But they won't receive any of the artifacts until they're displayed at the National Gallery of Art and then taken on the road throughout America and placed for a time on exhibit in every major city. I owe that much to the people. Thank you, sir. My compliments on your astute judgment. You see, said Wallace, grinning, I'm not the ogre you thought I was. After Zandecker, Monroe, and Harper departed through the tunnel back to the White House, Wallace told his chief of staff he wanted a few moments alone. He sat there, lost in his thoughts, wondering how history would treat him. If only he was clairvoyant and could read the future. No doubt a talent every president since Washington wished he'd possessed. Finally, he sighed and called in Pecorelli. Who am I scheduled to see now? Your speechwriters would like a few minutes of your time to put the finishing touches on your speech to the Hispanic American College Association. Yes, that is an important speech, said the president, his thoughts coming back online. It's an excellent opportunity to announce my new plan for a cultural arts agency. It was business as usual in the executive office.